The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes five times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is time for the Mike Tomlin news conference. Going to be talking about a rematch with the Cleveland Browns. Has to be regretting, or maybe not. Maybe not. But if you gave him truth serum, he has to regret that he took Russell Wilson out of that game in Cleveland. He just has to. The ramifications of that decision could be felt the rest of this season. I mean, it was wild, man. You have a red hot starting quarterback. And it's not just that you take him out of the game. Like, I thought it was a good shift in momentum when Justin came in and ran. But when you need to throw, there's one guy and one guy only. And I guess to their credit, Artie and Mike decided just to use Russell this week against Cincy, except to bring in Justin late and only to run, which I think is the way to go with him. Is our friend Pomp introducing Tomlin right now?
Yeah, there's Bob. We know him.
Lots of pomp and circumstance over there. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. The text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And we're going to have the presser reaction coming up with Brian Batko, brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. So momentarily, the Steelers coach, he's going to give us the breakdown of the Browns. I bet he hated watching that Myles Garrett film from the last game.
That was probably the biggest performance Myles Garrett has ever had against any team. And of course, it happens against the Steelers after all the crap that he talked on TJ Watt.
I think TJ is going to come back with a fairly big performance this time around.
I do too.
I just have that feeling. How long is Pompeiani going to go
here? He's still going right now. He's giving
a big recap. What is he doing? What's he dressed in today?
Well, he's got his little coat on, which is nice. He also has a blue shirt and another little jacket. Yeah. So he's got a lot of layers today.
Tie? Does he have a tie on today?
No tie, just a plaid shirt.
I wish he was here, and he'll be here tomorrow and help us react to this. Brian Batko coming in right after the news conference. In fact, he'll be in during it. Me and Brian will be breaking bread here, and then we'll be reacting afterward, hopefully with you, at 412-928-9370. Jameis Winston, man, I wonder if they'll get the full Jameis the way that Denver did. 800 yards passing and 9 interceptions in one game is what's up next for him. That guy is mercurial, to put it mildly. I like him.
He's a likable guy. Like, he really is. He's a unique individual compared to when he came into the league and the circumstances around him at Florida State compared to now. Yep. He has done a complete 180 as a person. I like the person that
he
is.
How about as a quarterback? That's what I meant. I mean, I like him.
No. Well, as a quarterback, he's also still a gunslinger, makes a lot of odd decisions. I think he's a little bit better compared to his 30-30 season. Congrats to him on the 30 touchdowns, 30 picks. Remember that?
Yeah. I mean, that was last night. The reason I like him is he's entertaining, I think, on the field. And he's going to make big plays. We know that much. Sometimes he makes them for both teams.
There he is.
Good afternoon. As always, I'll start with a quick review of our last performance. As I mentioned post-game, man, I was just really appreciative of the fight, of the collective's ability to smile in the face of adversity, things that happen all the time in play, but just to display that collective mettle, the ability to respond in negative circumstance and produce playmaking, I think that's required. Obviously, in the thick of your schedule in division play, as the road gets narrow, it's just good to experience those things in the pursuit of victory. And there were several displays of it. Obviously, the game didn't get started the way that we would like in terms of the pick six, but I just like the offense's quick response to that in terms of taking the ball and going back down the field. I thought the offense, in several circumstances, displayed the type of complementary response that you need from an offense. Whether it was a turnover response like that or a response to a scoring drive by Cincinnati's offense, I just love that component of our play that was on display. I also liked our red zone execution. We've talked openly about utilization of the mini buy in that way in an effort to be more effective in that area. You're not going to win many games, particularly high-scoring games like we were in last Sunday, unless you're going up by seven as opposed to by three. Hopefully we use that as a catalyst to continue along those lines as we push into December. On the other side of the ball, when you're going against the likes of Joe Burrow and Chase and Higgins, you're going to be challenged, man, and I just like that group's collective fight. I thought early in the game in particular we didn't do a good enough job of managing Joe in terms of his ability to extend, stepping up and running up at times into the pocket in an effort to make plays. We focused a lot of energies on minimizing that. I thought we warmed up to that component of play. I thought we settled it down some in the second half with a variety of fronts and calls and so forth, and obviously the effort of our guys. You're going to need some turnovers to get out of an environment like that, and can't say enough about the efforts, not only in terms of the general playmaking, but the ball awareness. The hunting of the football is required. The three takeaways, obviously, one being a return for a score was a significant component in terms of how the game played out. I didn't like, a couple of things that happened in the special teams game. I thought they had the field position component of it. Our kickoff units didn't pin them back well enough. We deferred and chose to kick off, but I think they got the ball on the plus side of the 30. And when we make that decision, man, we're trying to fight for blades of grass. And, you know, any yard that you get on the opposite side of the 30 is an advantage for us and not so when you don't. And so we need to get better in that area. And also we got a kick blocked and, you know, we can't allow anything to minimize the exploits and talents of Boz. It's automatic, and so we got to shore up those things. In particular, because when you have stuff on tape in the NFL, you better respond quickly, appropriately in terms of minimizing it. Errors like that provide focus and agendas for others, and so we're preparing with an edge, understanding that. As we get ready to go this week. From a health standpoint, a couple things of note. Fully expect Alex Highsmith to be available to us this week. We got some other guys that might position themselves for the consideration as well. Corey Trice, Mon Adams. Calvin Austin is in the concussion protocol, and so we'll follow the medical experts there and let them provide us appropriate information about where he is and what the prospects of his participation might be based on that. Now let's get back, and I say let's get back because it feels like I was just talking about Cleveland. Let's get back to Cleveland. If you saw the game last night, man, you saw what they're capable of with Dorsey as a play caller and Winston as a quarterback. There was some explosive playmaking. They went up and down the field. Judy had a big night. And that's what I meant when I described him as a gunslinger a couple of weeks ago when we played him, man. He's got unbelievable arm talent. He was the first pick in the draft. And you're not the first pick in the draft for no reason, man. He's got arm strength. He's got accuracy. He's got trajectory. He can place the ball just about anywhere on the field. He's a big-time competitor to boot. He never turns down competition. You know, he's going to fight to win possession downs and things of that nature. Man, we got to do a really good job of matching that competitive spirit, making our plays, knowing that there's a potential that you could give some up, man, when a guy comes at you the way he does and with the amount of weaponry that he has at his disposal. I'll talk about some of those weapons. Can't say enough about Njoku, man, and his growth and development over his time in Cleveland. He's a splash play guy. He's down the field in a lot of ways. He's really good in the underneath rhythm passing to get spot drop zones. And so he's a big play guy and a high volume guy. He does a real nice job in max protection. They balance out the max protection by hitting him on check downs and throwing tight end screens. It's kind of always been a function of their ball since he's been there. We got to be thoughtful about who we put on him and when. He's a big time red zone threat. He got big in the red zone against us for a 2-point play. He got big last night in the red zone as well. It shows up consistently, and so it's something to be reckoned with, his talents and the way that they utilize his talents. Judy is a route runner. They move him around quite a bit to make it difficult for you to match up on him. But they do a really nice job of you know, utilizing his skill set. There's not a route that he can't run. He gets in and out of breaks really well. He's capable of going by you in terms of the vertical passing game. He can create space and separation in the non-vertical passing game with his short area quicks. Moore and the others, man, will round out the group. Both of the running backs, and I say both backs because, man, they're utilizing Ford equally as much as they are Mr. Chubb at this juncture, and so we got to respect that component of it as well. You know, we're always ready and respectful of the talents of Chubb, his pick and vision and patience and ball placement, his contact balance, all of those things are top tier. That's why he's had the career that he's had, and you know, we've had some high-quality matchups against him in the past, and so we're working with an edge with that understanding. And with the evolution of Jerome Ford during his absence, man, they've got an awesome 1-2 punch. Ford is big play capable. When he came out in the draft, I think he had the most explosion plays of any running back in his draft class, and I think that's still evident in his play today. He's capable of some breakout runs. He had a big one last night as well. And so, you know, just minimizing who they are and how they divide their labor up and getting more familiar with their offense under the current circumstances a challenge. You know, we got familiarity because of the continuity there and obviously the divisional relationship component. But with Dorsey being a relatively new play caller and Winston being new to this division, there are a lot of things that kind of have our attention in an appropriate way to make sure that we're positioning ourselves for the high-level strategy that takes place when you're in divisional ball, particularly the second time around. On the other side of the ball, we didn't do a good enough job of minimizing Myles Garrett in the first game. Man, he was significant, not only his playmaking, but the energy that he provides, his teammates, their followers. He made some significant plays early on in that game that made it tough uphill sledding the rest of the way for us. But it's not just the beginning of the game. It's over the course of the entirety of the game. We better work to minimize his impact. They do some awesome things to challenge you in that way. They move him around quite a bit, both edges. He also plays on the interior. We better do a really good job in one-dimensional moments, obviously. You get behind the chains, possession downs, et cetera. He's at his best in those moments, and not only is he looking to close the door in terms of the pocket, but he's always ball searching and has been highly productive in that area as well. He's got a well-rounded group along with him. Tomlinson is a core interior guy and run stopper. They do a nice job on the second level playing behind that collective. Jordan Hicks was fresh off an injury the last time we played him. He's really probably showing some that he's gaining some traction in terms of play. Being back in the fold and being a central communicator and in the mix of just about everything that they do on the second level. And then they got a veteran secondary, one that's been together for a number of years. They got three top flight corners that's been there a number of years. Can't say enough about Denzel Ward, his awareness, his eyes, his ball skills. He made a nice play last night. That's not surprising in any way. But just that overall collective. Newsom is a former first rounder that plays. Emerson, obviously, is, I think, former third rounder. Those guys have been together, that collective, for a number of years. They got a veteran safety tandem that plays very solidly as well. Can't say enough about Delpit and his versatility, all the things that he does for them. He plays linebacker in one-dimensional passing circumstances. He's often the down safety and run fits. He's a good blitzer. He covers tight ends in one-dimensional passing circumstances as well. And so, man, we got a lot of things to get prepared for, but I'm sure they have a similar posture. The familiarity makes it fun and challenging at the same time. I'm excited about getting started with this process, man, and continuing with our divisional journey. No rest for the weary. I'm excited about getting back to it this week and in the confines of Akershore. I'll pause and open it up for questions.
Mike, after what you saw from your offense in Cincinnati and what you saw with the Browns last night against a pretty good defense, are you more comfortable now than, say, maybe early in the season playing in a shootout if you have to?
You know, I don't know that I'm ever comfortable playing in a shootout. It's just my background and my expertise, to be quite honest with you. I respect offenses and talented players, and I acknowledge when we're faced with stiff challenges, but it doesn't mean that I'll ever be comfortable in those circumstances. I have certain expectations because of my professional journey on defense that I expect us to slow those things down and minimize some of that. And the rare instances that we don't, I'm thankful that we have an offense that's capable of matching it.
Mike, I know you don't have control over the schedule and don't care about it, but whenever you have a game like that, like this, it's so fresh, like against Cleveland, does that change your approach at all to how you prepare for a game like this, or how you even try to defend against what they do?
It does not, to be quite honest with you. It's the second time around. We come into each season knowing that we get two shots at divisional opponents. The only thing that might change the texture to it is it might be some player availability circumstances that happened in game one that might still persist in game two, and oftentimes that's not the case. But other than that, it's the second time around in divisional play for us. It doesn't matter for me whether we played them, you know, a week ago or a month ago. We have that experience. We've got to put together plans and counter plans based on what transpired, and I'm sure they're doing similar things.
Mike, why is Russ fitting so well here?
You know, I don't know. You know, he's a football guy, you know. He loves football. He likes to work. I think that if you have that general approach, this is probably an easy train to get on because that's my tenor. That's our tenor. We love football. We like to work at it. We like to take the mystique out of performance. You do that through high energy and urgent preparation, and all of those things appear to be naturally him.
Mike, you guys seem to be giving up more chunk plays the last couple of weeks on defense. What do you guys have to show up in your passing game to limit those opportunities?
You know, I'm not ready to acknowledge that as a trend, to be quite honest with you. You know, we play some good offenses, and guys have made some plays. We're going to continue with our preparation process and put our best foot forward and hope that we minimize it this time around, certainly.
Mike, Joey was penalized 57 yards in that game. Is there anything you need to tweak with his kind of approach?
No tweaks in terms of the approach. Certainly, he could have been better from a technical standpoint. In review of the tape, you know, some technical things at the line of scrimmage that oftentimes lead to circumstances down the field could be better. But also, as I mentioned after the game, a component of that is competing against the likes of T. Higgins and his style of play. I felt the same way when we played D.K. Metcalf late last year, for example. You have to match physicality of these big people, and sometimes you do so at risk, and that's just a tightrope that I and he are willing to walk in an effort to be competitive. One thing we're not going to do is turn it down and allow him to catch the ball. He's a big guy. As you saw that touchdown he had late in the game against Cam Sutton, he is a challenge. And so, you know, when we play Shaq, we're going to use our fouls. We're not going to allow him to get us off the block, if you need a basketball analogy.
Mike,
Mike, in the 6 quarters that you've had since halftime in the last Cleveland game, where has your offensive line gotten better, and what can you pull from either against Cincinnati or the second half against the Browns?
I have no idea. I hadn't looked at that small sample size, to be quite honest with you, in an effort to paint a picture. We're just trying to be our best each and every down. We had a bad half. We made some corrections. We went out and played better in the second half. We had a week's preparation last week in an effort to tee up against a familiar opponent. So I don't know that there's any trends there worth mentioning from my perspective.
Mike, is there a challenge in playing a team that, you know, they're not going to make it to the playoffs this year? They're maybe more aggressive. They went on fourth down a lot against you guys. Maybe if their season circumstance was different, they would be maybe more conservative. Is there a challenge in that?
I don't care about the circumstances of people we compete against and how it might affect their decision making. I'm just playing and playing to win. I assume that people are going to pursue victory aggressively. That's just a component of the National Football League, particularly as we get into December. And so I think I have that mindset every week. They could be 3-9 or they could be 9-3 and have that same posture. And so that's my general mindset.
Like a couple weeks ago, with the Russ had that interception in the end zone when he was targeting Darnell late in the red zone. What does it say about him that last week he adjusted to the game plan, was taking the checkdowns, and was kind of maybe smarter with the football?
I don't know if there's an adjustment there. That's just such a small sample size. Like I was just saying there, you know, we're going to have some plays that we wish we could have back, but it doesn't change our posture in terms of approach, and he's just simply playing subsequent downs and drives and opportunities.
What kind of time is carved out in practice for any kind of improvisation, such as like scramble drills for Russ and the receivers or tight ends?
It's a component of everything that we do. Sometimes we're more intentional about it than others based on a variety of circumstances, talents of people that we play or the schematics that they deploy. We're capable of thoughtfully extending plays, not only for our offense, but for our defense, to make sure that we're capable of functioning under those circumstances. Big plays happen on play extensions for both sides. It can be offensive positivity or offensive negativity. And so it certainly is an area to focus on and work. And during team development, I like for it to happen naturally. But if it didn't happen in naturally enough, I'll create circumstances where it does.
Mike, when you're the head coach in one place for as long as you have been, how do you go about ensuring that your voice stays fresh for players? And two, how do you avoid, like burnout in a profession that really can promote it?
You know, that question's easy for me. I love what I do. It's my job and my hobby. So burnout is not a component of the equation for me. I'm excited each and every week about the challenges that this role provides me and us. In regards to the messaging getting stale, I work with extreme urgency because I realize the careers of these players are short. And so my audience is forever changing. And so I'm less concerned about getting stale, and I'm more concerned about matching the urgency that is the short careers of most of these players. You know, there are outliers like Cam that's been in there for, you know, 25 years listening to me, but, you know, I care less about, you know, how he receives the message, and more about developing guys like Benton, who's a year and a half into receiving these messages. And man, I just want to continue to hammer home values and cultural values and how to play and so forth. And so experience has taught me that the stale component is probably overblown because the audience is forever changing.
Mike, on that note, how do you and your coaching staff kind of manage the highs and lows of individual players from week to week, whether it's a T.J. Watt or Dan Moore or Joey Porter Jr.?
I could talk forever about that, or I could give you a two-word answer. The bottom line is that's coaching. Coaching is being what they need you to be, whether it's encouragement or criticisms, not only in your words but in your actions. That's the job. Beyond the strategic component, the motivational component of individuals and collectives, we need to be what it is they need us to be.
Mike, after the game, you said that George needed to grow up regarding the penalties that he had. That's been a recurring thing. Because of that, at what point do you consider changing the approach to work on him minimizing those penalties and situations in game?
I'm not going to give you any detail about what goes on behind the scenes in terms of his growth and development. You know that's my style, and I'm going to be really consistent in it. Being transparent with you guys doesn't necessarily help or accelerate the growth process. And that's my agenda, not necessarily feeding the beast.
But is it a concern that he's had these penalties that are costly?
If it is or isn't, I wouldn't necessarily tell you, to be quite honest with you.
Mike, you threw the ball to your run people. Three passes to Michael Pruitt, you targeted Ben Cotton, a pass, and then another three to Cordero. Is that a matter of changing your tendencies, wanting to change your tendencies, and is that just part of coaching and schematics?
You know, I think it's being inclusive, man, and spreading the ball around, and Russ did an awesome job of that. I think when you do that, you make yourself a really tough group to manage and defend, and sometimes that's done through a variety of ways. Maybe it could be intentional on your part. Maybe it's just simply taking what the opposing defense is giving you schematically. Their attention might be on more known and consistent targets. And so neither here nor there for us, spreading the ball around is a good thing, certainly.
Mike, you guys had more yards after the catch in that game, something that any team had all year. Is that something that you guys think you can replicate more often this season, just with the playmakers that you have?
It has been our mindset since the early stages of team development. We've placed Mike Sullivan in charge of run after. He's a run after catalyst for the group. Sometimes if you want to point an emphasis in a certain area, you put somebody in charge of it. You allow them to own it. Grady Brown's in charge of the turnover culture on defense, for example. And because those are spaces that we want to dominate, we want to be a lead in. We believe it makes our process of the pursuit of victory more fluid. And so we're excited about that. It's not haphazard. It's very intentional, and hopefully it continues.
How does Russ's experience help that with pre-snap recognition to getting the ball out in the right spots?
Russ's experience helps with everything. You could apply that to any discussion. He's been doing it at a high level for over a decade, certainly.
Mike, what does the ability to play three outside linebackers do for your defense? And now that you have your full complement for one of the few times this season, do you think you could do it more?
It's pretty exciting, isn't it? Let's see where the roads lead, man. We got a week of prep. You can't run out of Rushman. I'm so excited about the potential of getting Alex Highsmith back and, you know, the development of Herbig, the acclimation of Preston. You can't run out of Rushman, particularly in December. And so it's exciting. Make no mistake, there's enough work for all parties involved, and we're excited about sorting that out as we prepare.
You talked about moving the ball around. How much more does it need to be moved around to get Mike involved, or when perhaps can he get into the dominoes here?
It's going to happen. It's simply a matter of time. I was really encouraged by the playmaking that he made during the week in preparation for the game. And oftentimes, when you're making plays in preparation, it ultimately shows up in play. And so I don't think any of us are pushing the panic button in that regard. I think all of us are just, you know, anxiously awaiting what we're looking at day to day to turn up with a higher level of consistency in stadium in terms of the opportunity.
Mike, last time you played the Browns, you were facing a short turnaround in a hostile environment and the weather conditions. How much does this maybe play in your favor this time?
I hadn't thought about it, to be honest with you. Some of those variables that you mentioned are things that I ponder late in the week, where there's less speculation about weather conditions and so forth. At the early stages of the week, man, I'm just leaning in on the strategy, the player matchups, and the divisional labor component of planning.
Mike, on that 43-yard slant of Van Jefferson, Russ is at the line of scrimmage. Is he going through some different checks? Is he changing the play? Or is that just an example of his experience?
Potentially. And it is an example of the latitude that experience provides. Not only in terms of getting us in the correct plays, but just the communication component in a hostile environment and working the play clock and some of those things. That's what I mean. There's not an equation or circumstance where his experience doesn't weigh in a positive way in terms of some of the things that happen in play.
Mike, what do you say about Arthur Smith and how his work has played out this year as far as building off of success early on and getting more results from your offense?
Man, had a lot of fun with Arthur. He's wired like I'm wired. He is a big-time competitor. He's excited about the next challenge. He cares less about what's in our rear view, only in terms of how it helps us get better. He's loving being a component of this AFC North football, and so I'm excited about continuing to go with him and what waits on us this week.
Mike, is there something about Joey's comportment that sort of allays any concerns about one bumpy week sort of bleeding into the next?
Heck yeah, man. He's got a serial killer's mentality. But if you're going to be a top flight corner, you better. And that's probably one of the things that I knew about him because of our personal relationship that really made me comfortable drafting him. It's not fake. It's real. He's not running from the fight. He's running to the fight. You better have a short memory at that position. And he's always had it. He was probably 9 or 10 when I met him, and he had it then.
Can you expand on the serial killer mentality?
Meaning that, you know, he's a competitor. He's running to it. He's ill affected by the outcome of plays. His confidence is unflappable. And all of that is needed.
Mike, Cam Sutton got the majority of the snaps over Beanie Bishop. What was the reasoning for that decision?
You know, just the complexities of what they do offensively, the fact that we were facing Joe Burrow, some of the challenges in terms of how they move people around. I thought it would benefit us to have a more veteran guy in the interior of our sub package, and it would aid us not only in terms of concept recognition but communication. Beanie still played in the game, and he's going to be a big-time component of what we do, and we're pleased with, you know, his contributions thus far. But week in and week out, we divide the labor up in an effort to win that game, and that's why we were so excited about getting Cam back. He's a Swiss Army knife. He's an awesome communicator. He's a high-level professional, and you have an opportunity to utilize those talents in a game like that. It's helpful. There's some things that Beanie does better than him, and so it's just really cool to have viable, capable guys for circumstances, because we're going to divide the labor up as we see fit in an effort to position ourselves to win football games and in that case, play good defense.
Anyone else?
Mike, you going to watch Hard Knocks?
Absolutely not.
Oh. All right, we'll end on that.
Thanks, guys.
Oh, was that a tremendous ending? Absolutely not. I am going to watch Hard Knocks tonight, Brian. You?
I can hardly wait, Joe. My wife's even going to watch it with me. She's not really a sports person, but she does occasionally get sucked into Hard Knocks. And I told her the other day when I wrote about it for the PG, I was like, did I tell you the Steelers are on Hard Knocks this year? She's like, what? No, you didn't tell me that. So looking forward to that tonight.
Brian Bacco of the Post-Gazette joining me post-Tomlin, as he does after every Tomlin news conference. The Mike Tomlin Presser Reaction brought to you by your local Parmore stores. Remember, if there's not a Parmore store near you now, there will be soon. Brian wrote a great piece, by the way, on the Hard Knocks thing. I want to ask him about that in the 1 o'clock hour. Got some player reaction to it. I think it's going to be tremendous. Okay, reaction to that. How about the Graves Digger again from the top rope? Will Graves, could you expand on the serial killer
comment? What are you, a cop? What's he go? He doesn't mean a real serial killer, but no, that was pretty funny. And I too wanted to hear more on the psyche of 8-year-old Joey Porter Jr. He's a very nice guy when we talked to him, so he wouldn't have been in my top five serial killer mentalities on the team. But
I think the Gravesdigger leads Pittsburgh media in the follow-up question, which is good stuff.
Most
really.
Rebound putbacks.
Yeah, yeah, he has a bunch of putbacks.
And you got to use your fouls when you're guarding Shaq. We found that out too today.
That was good. Somebody else made a basketball analogy today, didn't they, Limits?
Hack a Shaq.
I did earlier.
Yes, you did.
I do think it's a basketball mentality when you're going against a T. Higgins. You're a basketball guy.
Yeah.
You rough him up a little bit. You make him hit his free throws. You make him work for everything. In football, no yards after the catch, things like that. You just muck it up. He's going to get his because he's good.
Yeah, no easy buckets, but the difference is it's one thing to do that when you're playing pickup and you call your own fouls and there's
right.
no subs. It's another thing when you can, you know, obviously you're shooting free throws and potentially getting disqualified from a game
yes.
in a real basketball game. Joey Porter Jr. wouldn't get disqualified.
He wouldn't have made it out of the NBA game. He had six
no.
fouls.
Yeah, he would have been done even in that league. So that was tough.
Incredible. Brian, to me, what stood out was the George Pickens answers. Let's take a listen. I interpret it as Tomlin running interference again for Pickens. I did. Maybe he feels like calling him out once, sort of, after the game the other day was enough. But let's be honest, Mike, for all the good things he does, doesn't have a great track record with problematic receivers. Receivers who sometimes, hurt the team a little bit. I think Claypool, Antonio, Deontay, Santonio, Martavis. I mean, the list goes on. Usually they wind up out of town. Let's hear what he said, then I want to get your reaction.
After the game, you said that George needed to grow up regarding the penalties that he had. That's been a recurring thing. Because of that, at what point do you consider changing the approach to work on him minimizing those penalties and situations in game?
I'm not going to give you any detail about what goes on behind the scenes in terms of his growth and development. You know that's my style, and I'm going to be really consistent in it. Being transparent with you guys doesn't necessarily help or accelerate the growth process. And that's my agenda, not necessarily feeding the beast.
But is it a concern that he's had these penalties that are costly?
If it is or isn't, I wouldn't necessarily tell you, to be quite honest with you.
How do you interpret that? And what do you make of the whole Pickens situation, Brian?
Hard to say. I mean, at risk of trying to get into the psyche of Mike Tomlin when he gets those questions, I think, number one, he was in a pretty good mood today overall after that win Sunday. He could have been filled with a bit more vitriol for a George Pickens question, but he understands, I think, that it's becoming a problem and that it is an issue, but it also doesn't help to fan the flames via the media or say anything that's going to get plastered on headlines everywhere. It's always newsworthy when he's asked about him and comments on him because, let's face it, George puts the spotlight on himself with these antics week in and week out, whether it's the eye black, the second taunting penalty Sunday, that play and even the ensuing celebration could have been over just about immediately, but he chose to walk into the end zone with all eyes on him and then do the first down / finger gun gesture, depending on your perspective. So I think Tomlin gets it. And he's trying to walk the tightrope, as he said, with the Joey Porter Jr. penalty situation.
Right. I think, you know, I've seen people with still shots say, oh, Josh Allen did the same thing. Well, he didn't do the recoil that really makes it clear.
Yeah, I didn't see the video of Josh Allen. I'm assuming he did.
It was a gunshot. I think that makes it clear. I think that's a little bit of a difference when you pull back from it, like your recoil. I don't know. Just how about just don't do stuff
right
after the plays that could give the officials, there's ways to celebrate that very obviously leave no room for interpretation, right?
Yeah,
you can be happy and celebrate without dropping the ball on somebody's face.
Yeah, that one I thought was a little more ticky-tack, to use George's word, because I think the referee in the pull report after Sean Hockley said he either threw the ball or tossed the ball. And he really did kind of drop it. But again, just don't put yourself
right
in the situation.
Because you're George.
When you're you and you know you have a reputation at this point, and you even probably know, if you can ever be the slightest bit introspective, that sometimes your emotions are going to carry you away if you don't remove yourself from that situation. That's where the growth and maturity needs to come in. And Mike Tomlin, I'll go back and look during the break, Joe. I bet his answer to Brooks' question today was very similar to his answer around this time last year when the Pickens theatrics kept coming up. I'll search for the exact wording.
Man, I thought he had come around a little bit on that stuff with the arrival, the emergence of Russ as the starting quarterback, and then I still don't know what happened on the Hail Mary in Cleveland.
Yeah, there's a lot of tentacles to it. I think he's come around on some of the sideline frustration and blow-ups. I mean, there's been issues at times this year with body language, but I think maybe he's fixed that to some extent. And yes, some of this immaturity continues on with him.
So right now, before we move along here, right now, does the talent outweigh the antics? Would you be inclined to give George a contract extension? Do you think the Steelers will be?
This offseason would kind of be when you'd have to do it, I think, because I think you're really asking for trouble potentially if you just tell him to go into his final year of the deal and play on that. I think I would, but it's really close, and I don't envy being in their position with trying to make that call.
I know, and it shouldn't be close.
You tolerate someone until you can replace them, and
right,
that's why a guy like that tries as he might to make himself irreplaceable to you or any other team.
I guess I'm leaning back toward the talent outweighs all the other stuff, and I probably would, maybe based on the fact he's so young and any nuclear explosions might still be a few years off. See if I can stave that off for a while. So I'm leaning that way. How about you, Wonder Twin? Right now, if I told you Sign Pickens or not long term? Which way you leaning?
I'm really on the fence with this because the talent is there of a top five wide receiver in all of football. Do you want that to walk? I know how good they've been at finding receivers. Right now, I'd say I'd pay him, but I'd be cautious about how much I would give him guaranteed.
I think he's much more deserving than Deontay Johnson was a couple years ago when he got his extension.
How about that? But, Can you play for Brian a little treat we had before we part ways here of Jim or John Harbaugh talking about Deontay yesterday?
I'm going to have to wait just to clarify. There's some moving parts there that we're going to have to figure out and explore and just see where we're at.
The moving parts were Deontay moving backwards out of the facility, which I think will happen today.
Yeah, that sounded ominous for Deontay's future in
Unbelievable,
Baltimore.
That guy. All right, 412-928-9370. You want to weigh in on Pickens? Would you be inclined right now? Are you more inclined? Like, I hear you if you're one of the people out there saying this stuff is just petty and silly and who cares? The guy's talent, it far outweighs that. Yeah, the thing is with George Pickens is you can't replace the talent. And, you know, I ask as a legitimate question, Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette, how harmful are the antics? You know, in this case, pretty harmful to the pursuit of winning because he got two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties. Like you said, or intimated at least, I've seen worse that hasn't been called on both of those. But he's George. I mean, you can't take your eyes off the guy. The whole league is watching him because of his spectacular talent and his antics. He just can't leave the post-play situations alone. I still don't know what happened in Cleveland. If what happened is what I think did, then it was an unbelievably selfish play. I think he got tangled up with Newsom and then got pissed and rode the guy out of the end zone rather than trying to fulfill his duty of trying to get the high point on a Hail Mary and win the game. He paid no attention to that.
Yeah, and some people saw it as by the time Newsom was done interfering with him or whatever, he couldn't do much, so he decided to fight him. I didn't see it that way. I thought it was more of a situation where, why aren't you trying to fight back to the ball and put the petty beefs aside and try to help your team win a game, as unlikely as it may be in that circumstance? I think it's interesting because there's so many different avenues of it, and I think sometimes it's unfair to reduce it all to one big thing. Is he a problem or is he not a problem? I mean, there are problematic aspects of it that you wonder, are they going to get worse if he gets paid? Is he going to be more look at me and diva wide receiver? Or would giving him a big-time contract extension, that coveted second contract for any player in the NFL, content him to some extent?
I mean, Ryan Clark will tell you that AB's problems started with the money. Did Deontay's problem start with the money? It sure seems that way.
I would say so. And then, you know, you asked me before the break there, Joe, would you pay him? You almost have to make that decision right away after the season because I think he would hold in. Why would he not hold in? He saw a teammate before him at the same position a couple years ago who's not as accomplished statistically and I just think anecdotally not as good pull that maneuver and it worked for him. So I think you'd have to either...
Who are you talking about there?
Deontay Johnson.
Yeah, Deontay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he sort of held the Steelers hostage that year in camp. So,
I'm tempted. He's just so talented, though. That's the thing.
I know. I think the options in that case would be either give him the new deal or do you look to trade him?
And not just talented, but productive. It's not like we're talking about a guy like, man, if he ever fulfills his potential, although there's still a little bit of that. It's this guy already helps them win games with what he does. So for me, it's a net positive. Let's go to the phone lines, Wonder Twin.
Here's Greg in Monroeville.
Hey, Greg.
Hi, guys. Hey, regarding Pickens, you know, I think when he gets any sort of penalties, I'd say let's look at how severe they are. The ones the other day that caused us to be, out of the range for a good field goal or out of the range for a good play, they're definitely more serious than something that he might do that's a 5-yard penalty. So the more serious his antics, I think the more his the glass on him, the microscope on him is going to get bigger and bigger and harder. And that's the same with Porter. If Porter gives up just a little holding call at the line of scrimmage, big deal. That's not affecting us. But if they continue to give penalties that give the other team first down and an extra 15 yards, that's what it
hurts. Yeah, the bigger the issue,
hurt the player
for sure. The bigger the issue on the field, the more it affects the team. Obviously, have you ever heard Todd, a caller to the PM team, what he suggested the leadership core should do with Pickens, Brian?
I think I've heard it.
But yeah. Would you like to hear it again?
Sure.
I think it's the most sound, reasonable, and easily implementable advice that's out there. Brian?
My uncle Mark texted me during the game and said, just go to George afterward, and the first question just be, why, George? Why?
That's pretty much what Todd said.
I know. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of guys talking to him throughout that game. Broderick Jones.
That's the first sign of trouble.
I know. If he's your guy calming you down,
yes,
that's pretty interesting. And this is not a one-game thing. He's been doing that going back to week one in Atlanta. I noticed it when George was getting a bit frustrated on the sidelines, and in Indy, too, when he had the fumble. So I think Cam Hayward, somebody said, was talking to him at one point. Russell Wilson obviously told us after the game that he was trying to keep him engaged throughout. It is kind of just a constant, I don't want to know about headache, but at least distraction. If you're channeling any of your energy into trying to soothe number 14.
Right after the pick six, Tomlin practically had a 15-minute meeting with him. He's like hugging him and come on.
Yeah,
it's professional sports here. So what?
It gets old.
The other team got a pick six. It gets come old. Back and play.
And we have in our last caller there, Greg mentioned, you know, the penalties are starting to add up and they're actually hurting the product on the field. We haven't even gotten into the half-hearted route running, which he was apparently penalized for earlier this year with all the snap management, load management. You could argue, okay, they addressed that in whatever they did behind the scenes that Mike Tomlin didn't want to mention today to feed the beast, and he's not doing that anymore. He's playing 90% of the snaps. There was the non-blocking last year in the Colts game, which was clearly an issue that he probably had to answer for in front of the team in some capacity. So it hasn't just been the mindless stuff either. There's also the issues with, are you actively taking yourself out of the game because you're worrying about the wrong things? You're not keeping winning the main thing. That's a lot of ingredients that you've got to weigh this offseason if you're Omar Khan, Mike Tomlin and company.
Yeah, I mean, he's a young guy. I often think of myself at some of these athletes' ages, and you know, I get it, but I didn't have, you know, 51 guys and a whole city, nation depending on me to perform in an athletic contest. And it's just like, I mean, do we really need to? Okay, so Pickens got penalized probably on the pick six, got pushed to the turf. They got a touchdown. The game just started. We need to pull him aside for like a private meeting after that. I mean, just go out and play, really. Just go out and play. And then don't do anything catch that could be construed as unsportsmanlike. And it's really pretty simple. Like, let's not make it out to be like there's this 100-item list where it could go either way. Don't pretend to shoot a gun. Don't do the throat slash. Not that he's ever done that, at least that I've seen. Don't stand over a guy and stare down at him. And don't throw the ball on him or even drop the ball on him. That would be a good starter kit. How about don't do those four things?
Also, punting the ball into the stands didn't get a flag, but his wallet's going to be a little bit lighter from that one. So, yeah, it is just, it's always something with him. It's like playing whack-a-mole. Okay, he didn't freak out on any coaches or players on the sideline, but this time he did it to the opposing team, and we lost yardage because of it.
I'll say this much. He is creative. Whack-a-mole is a great analogy because it's the thing you'd least expect. Wait. The eye black under George's eye says what? Wait, he got railroaded out of bounds on a Hail Mary and got in a fight practically in the stands. Wait, he dropped a ball on somebody. Wait, he didn't block that time. Wait, he's not running routes. I mean, it could be any one of a thousand things.
I think we're due for a social media snafu.
Scrubbing.
I think City Limits will be calling Bingo if he gets that tonight around 8 or 8:30 or something. He has Pickens Bingo.
Who else we got?
Here is Gary in Washington.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Hey, quickly, the Steelers, of course they have a fighting chance this year. With Russ there, it's a legitimate option, and certainly to make the playoffs and to proceed in the playoffs and even give it a little shot at the Super Bowl. You mentioned all the three quarterbacks they have to go through, but is it necessarily that it's going to be all three? Could the scenario be that some of them play each other and eliminate one or two of them before the Steelers have to play them?
Let me package that and present it to the one and only Brian Batko of the Post-Gazette. Thank you for the call. We had a topic earlier on how the national media, Brian, I think, especially like yesterday and after the game the other day, has suddenly switched on the Steelers and talking about them as a legit Super Bowl team. They could get there. What would keep them from doing that? And my take was, while I do believe for the first time in years they do have a legitimate chance, the sheer odds of getting past, let's say, Lamar in round one, Josh Allen in round two, and Patrick Mahomes in round three, to me, are just too steep. It's almost an impossible challenge, I think. And that guy just asks, could they avoid some of those guys? Of course, but then there's still Justin Herbert, C.J. Stroud, people like that.
We always have a fighting chance if George Pickens is lined up against a cornerback who says or does something to him he doesn't like.
Right.
He probably will get a fight in that case. But yeah, to his point, I'm kind of with you, Joe. I've been moving, inching closer with each stellar performance by the Steelers, and particularly Russ, with putting them to that top tier of NFL teams or even just AFC teams. Maybe I need to see it against the Chiefs on that Christmas Day game because they've been the big bad on the block and they've been a thorn in the Steelers' side, unlike the Ravens. They kind of only have one of those boxes checked, albeit without the postseason success. Yeah, it is a gauntlet to go through. And I kind of go into every season thinking, how many quarterbacks can realistically lead their team to the Lombardi Trophy? I certainly didn't have Russ in that bucket in early September or October or November. But as we flip the calendar to December here, it's harder and harder to poke holes in it. So I get the optimism. I do. But it is difficult to run through that many teams on this side of things where you could argue, I think, the two best complete teams and rosters in football right now are over in the NFC, in Detroit and Philly, but the AFC still has all those guys that you just mentioned, Joe.
What about the Buffalo Bills, Dr. Batko?
I said you could argue, which I guess you would argue for them, but what Philly and Detroit are doing to teams is pretty impressive week in and week out here.
It is.
But they don't have Josh Allen.
All right.
Or Patrick Mahomes.